You're listening to Sea Change, a five-part series where we discuss how global changes affect your local places in Southeast Alaska. From the mountain rains to the icy waters of Sitka Sound, students in marine ecology bring examples of climate change and ocean acidification into focus for you.
Hello, my name is Brandon Dixon, and joining me today is Jacob Gifford.
Hello.
Clara Zader.
Hello.
And we and 12 other undergraduate students are from the University of California, Santa Cruz. And we've been here for about a month now in Sitka, doing some research with the Sitka Sound Science Center. And we're looking at the different plants and animals in the sound and how they're reacting to climate change. As you've been hearing from previous podcasts, carbon dioxide emissions are the main driving force behind climate change and the warming of the atmosphere and the ocean, and how the ocean is becoming more acidic. In a bit, we're going to be talking about personal actions you can take to cut down on your carbon emissions so that we're contributing less to the production of carbon, which will help slow down and reduce the effects of warming and acidification. But right now, we're going to talk about seagrass beds. We've been here in the Sound for a while, so we've just been noticing that there's a lot of seagrass beds, and so we're really interested in this. So this is just one of the solutions that we're going to be talking to you about. And Jacob, maybe if you could tell us about how seagrass beds are, you know, a benefit to sea creatures.
Yeah, so seagrass beds have a huge potential for helping out marine critters. They undergo photosynthesis, which draws out carbon dioxide from the waters. And this is potentially creating this haven that allows shellfish and baby fish to grow and develop. One study in Oregon was done where baby oysters were planted inside and outside of seagrass beds. And it was later documented that only the oysters inside the seagrass bed grew and thrived. Oysters are just one type of shellfish. There's also mussels and even other baby fish that are very sensitive to ocean acidification could use these seagrass beds to help them grow their population in the long run. So that's pretty awesome.
Okay, so you're saying seagrass beds have this sort of nursery effect on these baby shellfish and fishes, and that it helps to shield them from different acidic waters. Do seagrass beds have any other effects besides reducing acidity?
Yeah, so they're used as foraging and spawning grounds. The herring, for example, which contributes to multi-million dollar industry in Alaska. The herring used the seagrass beds as spawning ground. It's been reported that on a single blade of grass, 3 million eggs can be found from the herring.
Wow, 3 million, that's a lot. Do all of those grow up into adult fish?
Some of them grow and go back to the population, but others will support the community by acting as food for other fish and crabs and just other critters that live in the seagrass bed.
Okay, so we've been talking about these short-term effects that seagrass beds have and how they protect different sea creatures underwater. But seagrass beds actually play another role as well. They act as a long-term storage for carbon. Seagrass beds will photosynthesize and draw carbon out of the ocean and deposit it in the ground beneath them under their root systems. And we've been looking at sediment cores, and they've shown us that seagrass beds can actually store carbon for over 6,000 years. And just to put that in perspective, rainforests can only store carbon for some decades to a few hundred years at most. So seagrass beds have this really strong impact about storing carbon for long periods of time.
So it sounds like seagrass beds are like a really valuable resource.
Yeah, they are. And unfortunately, what we're facing right now is that we have a huge declines in seagrass beds. So since the 1990s, we've actually lost half of Earth's seagrass beds in total. And currently, we're losing about 7% of them per year because of that. Jacob, maybe you could tell us about how seagrass beds are currently doing in Alaska, specifically.
Yeah, not a lot of research has been done in Southeast Alaska. Juneau is a good example of a place that has documented their seagrass declines, though. It's been reported that 37% of their seagrass beds have gone away, but that's better than the global average, which means there's still a lot of seagrass there to be saved.
And what is causing these seagrass bed declines?
Two main reasons in Alaska. The first is shading. So boats that are parked at harbors and docks, they actually prevent the seagrass from getting the sunlight that they should be getting because the seagrass has to undergo photosynthesis, like I mentioned, and that can only happen in shallower waters. And then the second cause is runoff. So with coastal development and logging, sediment will run into the water and cloud the system, which prevents, the seagrass from getting sunlight.
Okay, thank you. So we've been talking about how seagrass beds act as this protecting source to protect different sea creatures underwater. But seagrass beds themselves are under different pressures. And so one of the things that we need to do is cut out the root problem, which is that we are producing carbon dioxide ourselves. So, Clara, maybe if you could tell us about ways that we are actually producing carbon dioxide in our everyday lives.
Yeah. So, unfortunately, American emissions are actually really, really high. They're about four times the global average. And you might think that that's just because we are a really well-developed country or because we have a higher standard of living than other countries. But in comparison to similar countries, we actually have about double the amount of carbon emissions. So that sounds really bad, but it just means that we have a lot of room for improvement.
And what are some of those ways that we could improve?
The number one source of carbon emissions from us Americans is through our transportation. So that mostly means our cars, and a way that we can reduce that is just to reduce the use of our cars as much as possible. So carpooling or biking or even walking when you can. We've been here in Sitka for a few weeks now, and we've noticed that you can pretty much walk wherever you need to go. Another method of transportation besides cars that contributes a lot to carbon emissions is through flying. So maybe next time you are considering planning a trip, you can actually do something like a staycation. There's a lot of fun things to do around the island that we've discovered already, like snorkeling, camping. There's a lot of really great hiking trails, and a fishing trip could be really fun too.
Besides transportation, what are some other areas that we could reduce carbon dioxide emissions?
Your furnace is actually a really big source of carbon emissions. So maybe properly insulating your house to try to keep the heat in as much as possible and the cold out. Instead of cranking up the heater, it could save you money, and then it could also reduce the carbon impact. And that's true for a lot of your household appliances. Nowadays, there's a lot of energy efficient options. And that can even be as simple as just replacing your light bulbs to be more efficient, like the LED light bulbs or fluorescent light bulbs.
And so are there any other areas in our life that we don't really think about, but that actually have a pretty big impact on our carbon emissions?
Yeah, so actually reconsidering your everyday diet can make a really big impact. A lot of people don't know this, but the meat that you eat, especially beef, actually takes a lot of energy to produce and actually get to your table. So cutting out meat, especially beef, where you can actually make a really big impact. And also, eating meat that you fish or you hunt takes a lot less energy to get to your plate, so that can be a really good way to reduce your carbon emissions as well.
And with that, we'd like to conclude our podcast series. Thank you so much for all the support from the Sitka community, as well as the Sitka Sound Science Center. We had a great experience here conducting our research, and I'm Jacob Gifford.
And I just want to thank you guys again. My name is Brandon.
Yeah, thank you, Sitka. I'm Clara.
Signing off now.
Sea Change is a podcast produced by students from the University of California, Santa Cruz, with direction from Dr. Christy Croker. Our music is by Poddington Bear, and this series was done in collaboration with the Sitka Sound Science Center and KCAW.